All right, 3, 2, 1. This is 60 Seconds with Ezekiel Consoli.
There we go.
You ready?
Yes, I am.
Start the clock. Best restaurant in New York?
Ooh, Rule of Thirds.
Whoa, fantastic. Most frustrating app on your phone?
Grindr.
Least favorite color?
Least favorite color, yellow.
Favorite brand right now?
Brand. Oh, brand. I'm going to say Amy Leondor.
Okay. Do I look like a rat or a fish?
You.
Mm.
More like a fish. For sure, 100%.
And your career in a noise?
Oh, yeah?
Sorry. Oh, my God, I was not expecting that. Wow, Ezekiel, welcome. Welcome.
Thank
my
you.
My darling friend and beautifully talented, highly awarded, Emmy
Thank you.
Decorated.
Thank you. Decorated. I like
decorated. Creative. I'm going to call you creative director today. I know we go by associate creative director sometimes.
I think, you kind of get to choose who you are when you work for yourself.
Well, okay, let's go back. So I want to know, who was the first person that ever made you feel like you had talent?
I think it was a stranger. I didn't know them at all. And I think my moment of realization that I felt like I think I have something that maybe somebody else doesn't have was when I was doing this project called Pride Train when I was in school still, and it did really well. It's like a subway system announcement poster, but it was for Pride, and it was kind of right around the election when the unnameable won the election. And it was just honestly like a very really 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 sad time in New York, and I think people were very receptive to receiving like a positive message. And we did this, we put them up in the subway system, and this one stranger, like the first one, reach out and sort of like this huge paragraph sort of telling me how impactful that was in their day and how seen and heard and like actually just really genuinely happy made them feel. I was like, like I'm not getting like accolades from the industry right now. I'm getting accolades from someone who completely doesn't know me, and like something I did actually affected their day. You know?
What was it? What did the poster say? Or what?
So the poster was basically just kind of like we imitated exactly what the announcement posters at the time looked like on the subway system, and what we did was like slightly changed the copy to be obviously very political, and it said something along the lines of like no bigotry, hatred, or prejudice allowed on this station, and then the small lines on it were sort of like somewhat funny and a little positive, and sometimes like a little more political. So it's kind of like, well, there were many, it was like a series, right? And then like the sign on the top was obviously Pride flag.
Yeah.
So obviously it made you stop and look at it and kind of like want to read it, because like obviously none of us really read the announcement posters. Like they're kind of just like there, and like we just walk by them. But this was like a nuance of like a difference in it made people kind of look and be like, that's not the regular
amazing
thing. And then we read it and then like kind of react to it. But I think that was just like the moment, you know, like I felt like I always wanted to impress people in the industry, and this time I was actually impressing strangers on the streets.
When you say industry, so where did you come from? How did you break into this industry?
I mean, I came from Argentina, grew up there, and when I moved here, I originally thought I was going to pursue a career in graphic design, which still really love graphic design. It was great, but I took my first ad class. I went to School of Visual Arts, and I took my first ad class, and it was very mind-blowing to realize. I guess I just really didn't know anything about advertising at the time, and it was really almost like exciting to realize that by being in the ad industry and being an art director or a creative director, whatever the role may be, I could actually use my conceptual thinking and put it into play, as well as use design and any other skill that I had.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went to School of Visual Arts, and it kind of really just like blew my mind. I became so inspired, and I became so excited about, honestly, New York, like just like being in the city, that like the idea of like making work that kind of like Pride Train, right? Like making work that people would see on the streets and like, you know, affect their day, which just became something that I kind of became a little bit obsessed about.
Why did that have to be in New York and not in Argentina?
I mean, I guess honest answer is, I never felt Argentina just never had this like almost like community feeling like New York does, right? Like there was no push for me to really want to be a creative there, not only from like an income perspective and just like an opportunity perspective. Like creative talent is just not as appreciated in other countries, to be honest. And I think just New York just happens to be this like cosmopolitan place where like everyone just like seeks creativity and like want to consume it all the time. So it just felt like there was more opportunities here, honestly.
And who were you at that point? So this is, we're talking probably about 8 or 9 years ago, right?
Yeah, this is like, it's been 10 years now, yeah.
10 years. So 10 years ago, who were you at that point?
Oof. I definitely was a very, when I first started, I was definitely a very fake it till you make it kind of thing.
Okay.
Like I was super insecure about my creative talents and I was just doing anything and everything I could to make it, honestly. I used to have like 3 internships at the same time. Like I've always been, I mean, you kind of know this about me at this point, like I've always kind of been like an overachiever in that sense, but I was very insecure. Like I legitimately would go home and like feel like very like, I don't know if I can keep pushing to do this. Like I couldn't crack briefs at the beginning and I just felt like I was kind of being an imposter in a way.
What were you struggling with the most, do you think?
I think my biggest struggle was just honestly trying to satisfy the capitalist machine, right? Like I went to school thinking that I was going to be doing this like overly insane creative stuff, but I never was told that the truth about this industry is that it's also obviously a commercial industry. So like the goal isn't exactly to just like make cool art always.
Yeah.
And I think that was really something that I struggled with in my first couple of years because I was like, oh, but I was told I could like make an idea about going to Mars. And like, they were like, no, you kind of just have to go to the subway. Like it was like very like the opposite of like what I thought my creative output would be. And then obviously I figured it out and I kind of like learned to accept that truth and kind of like, okay, well, you can still do good work. You just kind of have to figure out how.
What did you stop doing and start doing more of?
I think I just kind of started playing the game a little bit.
What does that mean?
I realized that even though, I mean, to be honest, I did accomplish making good work in an agency environment, but I think I kind of cracked the code being like, okay, well, I do think that if you're truly a good creative and like you really love this and you believe in it, like maybe your best work could just be work that you do on your own. And like, you don't really need like a big name agency behind it with like millions of dollars to make it. So like, I think like, if you look at my work and my career so far, like my best work and my biggest like accolades, if you may, have come from personal work, which like started with absolutely zero money. Like in the Pride Train thing, we spent like $600 to and like, it's my most like memorable, honestly, in like the industry thing. And then like, I got an Emmy from something that actually had $0 in it and it ended up growing up to becoming like a $1 million production. But like, I didn't put any money in it.
How did that happen? So wait, I want to pause on this. You won an Emmy.
Yeah.
Right. Which really is weird. Most creative people will get to the end of their career and never achieve an Emmy. They might achieve or win a one awards or like a Cannes gold, maybe. Mm-hmm. But an Emmy is something completely different. How did you go around by winning that?
It's kind of
can I have
ironic.
You? Can I just see this? Can I wait, show me this Emmy thing that you have on the table? So, how did you win this thing?
To be honest, it's kind of weird because like it was one of those things where like I didn't actually even think like you were saying it wasn't even really on my game plan or like my. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest, I just overall I never really been like after awards, and like this was just one that I didn't even consider. And like when it happened, I was kind of like, oh, okay, well, definitely now I want like more of them. Like now I'm like, I would need more Emmys. And why not an Oscar? Who knows? But like, I think it just kind of came to life in the pandemic. I don't want to sound like airheaded or like weird about this, but I do think I've been lucky and I'm so grateful that for me, the pandemic kind of was a good thing for my career. Like it really just, I'm a very like emotional creative. And I think like being so lonely and so sad and the pandemic and like at the beginning of it and kind of like, as you know, like I'm a very social person. It was really hard for me to understand. Mm. Like I just kind of have to like be with my cat. Like it was honestly just like really hard to process. So I was writing a lot and I wrote this poem that kind of was about being alone during the pandemic. And I was like, this is actually kind of good. Like I feel like I need to do something with it. So I presented it to a director friend of mine and he became obsessed with it and sort of like started pitching it to people. And next thing I knew, like I was at that point, we couldn't even actually shoot in real life. So I was like, okay, this is going to be like found footage kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he fully pitched it to like, we ended up having like Sarah Jessica Parker as a voiceover, Sufjan Stevens as like the music in it. Almost had The National in it, but he was too busy, I guess, like making Taylor Swift album, and he rejected us, which I, good for you. But also thank you, because that was a good album. But and then like, yeah, all like New York City Ballet was a part of it, and this thing just grew into this crazy production. And it was so good, we ended up giving it to a brand, NAMI, which is a mental health organization. And yeah, next thing I know, we were like, we got an Emmy. Like, it was like, we got nominated, and like, I didn't really actually pay attention to it. And then we were like, yeah, we actually won it.
Wow.
I was like, oh. It's like, this is kind of a weird moment, because I never really seeked it. But now I feel like, it did feel good that it was like such a personal piece.
Yeah.
And it got like recognized in like a way.
It is amazing. But also, you're a designer slash art director slash conceptual creative. That was from writing work.
Yeah, I think I'm just like a very, I'm just like such an emotional creative. Like I need constantly to be outputting my emotions into something.
Mm.
And writing has always really been a big part of my life, honestly. And I kind of, I journal a lot, and I really do write a lot. So it was one of those things where like, that was my only, I couldn't do any creative work. I couldn't shoot anything. I couldn't like, there was no production happening at that time. So like, this was my only like way to put my feelings on paper, right?
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, I mean, I love writing, and it really is very like therapeutic, honestly.
What would you say your creative superpower is?
I think I'm very good at understanding human behavior. And I think it comes from like me being so like emotionally mature in a way, and so emotionally vulnerable all the time. I think I truly understand how people I understand how to make people kind of break out of this like shell of like not wanting to be accepting of feelings and sort of become a little more human. I think I get that. It really, and I use myself as an example, right? Like I use like how I behave or how I consume information from like a emotional place to do it. But yeah, I think that's kind of a, I think that's a very big superpower in the ad industry, because it's so pragmatic overall.
Yeah. It's almost like you're a strategist as well in that. Yeah. Like it's like a human insight sort of thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Do you ever find that you squabble with the strategist?
Yeah, I mean, I find myself a lot of times kind of like changing the brief in a way. Like I'm like, I think this is actually a better idea. But like not in like a argumentative way. I'm a very collaborative creative, and I love strategists. I believe they're kind of like the second most important part, because creatives are the most important. But no, like I think they really are so key. Like a good strategy is really so key to making an idea that actually impacts culture, right?
Yeah.
But I do think that sometimes like strategists obviously have to also think about like the selling aspect of it all. And I think like creatives, sometimes we tend to be a little more like, nah, like we want more of like the good work sometimes. So I think like collaborating with them and sort of maybe pushing them a little bit towards like this like uncomfortable place of strategy really helps.
Yeah. I want to go back. So 10 years, I imagine that you came over, I think you came over with a partner. Is that right in thinking that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Like married, divorced.
Married, divorced. And also creative partner that you picked up in that time as well.
Yeah.
Right?
My first, who's my partner now.
Who is still your partner?
Yeah.
Permanent roles. I imagine you're probably gunning, okay, how can we get a permanent gig? Take me through.
Desperate.
Yeah, yeah, right. Okay, so.
Which is so ironic. yeah, I mean, like we, after I did that Pride Train thing, I remember my first interview in the industry was because I said something really nice to this woman who is an incredible human being and an icon, Barbara Lippert. I just said something nice to her in one of my classes, and she was like, do you want an internship? And I was like, sure, like, why not? And she got me into McCann, actually, for an interview. But I literally knew nothing about the industry at this point. I showed up, like, all I planned was, like, my outfit. Like, I showed up at this, like, interview, and I was, like, looking really nice and sharp. But, like, they were like, okay, like, what's your work like? And I was like, I don't work. Like, I, like, fully was just not, I was just not able to give them what they needed from me. So like they
but
were
you
like,
look great.
Yeah, but yeah, they were like, you know, like you seem really nice, but maybe like come back in a later time. And then the next year, I was so pissed about that, honestly, which is obviously my fault. But the next year I was like, I want to I want to go to McCann. Yeah. So I did the Pride Train thing, and it blew up. It went completely viral, and they reached out to me, and they were like, "Hey, like, do you want to come back?" And I was like, "Yep."
Wow, that's how you got in.
Yeah, so I started entering there, and then I think it was like 3 months or 4 months or something, and I was like, I need a job. I was like, I need to pay my bills and stuff.
But, so then you stayed in permanent employment for quite a long time, right? How long were you hired at like an agency permanently for?
McKen was actually my longest role. I was there for almost 3 years. And then I kind of just, to be honest, I kind of just like started jumping around, and like I became a little bit like obsessed with like the game of like getting higher up, and like kind of like, I think obviously in New York money is important, and like so I kind of started jumping. I went to McGarry Bowen, which, to be honest, it wasn't my favorite experience. And then the pandemic happened. So then it was kind of like a perfect excuse to kind of test out where did I actually want to work for a long time.
Right.
So I just kind of started. I went to VMLY&R after that. It's a lot of pitching, which didn't really want to do. And then I went to Joan Creative, which at the beginning was a great experience as well. Made some cool work, and I was there for like a year, and then it was just kind of like time to do my own thing, honestly.
Which part of you do you think fell out of love with the idea of permanent employment?
I just think it's all a lie. Like all the things people promise you when you take a full-time job, they just kind of slowly become a lie. And like, I think eventually you just kind of become fed up if you truly believe in this industry and you like really love what you do and you believe in your own work, right? Like, I think you just kind of get over like people telling you like, oh my God, like you're going to get to do the best work ever. Like, we really believe in good work. Like, our culture is amazing. Like, it's just all these like little lies that just kind of, once you're in, like they become really evident, and like you just kind of become a little like chess piece.
Which lies do you think became clear?
Well, the typical, to me, the biggest one always says, and not because I don't feel that way about myself, but I do think that this is like the biggest one that kind of comes to life really fast, is that like, we're hiring you because you're so special. And like, I do actually believe I'm special, but like, I think that it becomes really evident that I was hired always as like, I'm just another person on the roster.
Right.
Because like, once you're in, they don't really treat you that way. Like you have, sometimes like you, well, as soon as you get hired, like the first month, like you're fully just talking to like the CCO, like one-to-one. And then like eventually it just kind of fades.
And why do you think that happens?
Because I think it's so easy to convince someone to take a job and an opportunity when you make them feel like they're the best person for the role, which it really should be like that, right? Like they should be hired for being the best person on the role. But I do think that like the magic shouldn't fade. Mm. I think the promise should stick and like keep going. It shouldn't just be like a 1 month thing just so we can get you in, and then it's like all a lie.
Could you imagine ever going back into a permanent gig, or what would it take for you to be happy working somewhere permanently for another human being or business?
I don't imagine myself ever going back unless it was my own thing. And I do think that the one thing that it would take for me to go back would be like, honestly, a very high pay, which I don't think full-time roles can offer. And also just like a really big understanding that my life outside of work is actually more important than my job.
And what do you mean by that?
I think it's slowly changing, to be honest, and it's becoming a little better. But I do think that one of my biggest issues with the industry was that like, I legitimately could just never have plans. I could just only have plans if like my job allowed it. And that to me was just so hard to understand, because like, I love my job and I'm passionate about it and I'm really passionate about what I do. But that doesn't mean I hate my family and friends. Like, I get a little tired of like letting people I love down for a job. Like, yeah, money is great and like my creativity is great, but like, why can't I just do it in like the hours we agreed on to begin with? Like, why do I have to work till 3 a.m. because like you just don't hire enough people so you can save money? Like, it's just like, that's just really not my problem. And I think like, if you're going to make it my problem, then I should probably be making a lot more money. That's the biggest issue. Like, one of my agencies, I was hired as a senior, right? And like, eventually all the creative directors quit because they were being put into this position of like having to choose their personal lives or their jobs. And obviously, who would choose their job in today's world, at least? And they all quit. And I was a senior having to act like a CD, like for three accounts at the same time. And I'm like, I can do it. Like, I know I can, but like, why am I making so little? And like, why am I, like, I'm making so little money and I'm actually working like until 11 p.m. every night. Like, like, no. Like,
how would you, so, okay, let's imagine then we're starting EC Creative Agency. What, like, what rules would you lay down if you were to think, okay, I want to make sure I'm hiring and satiating the right talent. Mm-hmm. I want to keep them engaged, happy. The magic can't fade. Which rules would you lay down, do you think?
Well, to begin with, I think one of the biggest things that I think, if you want to make someone fully be committed to a role and like almost like really believe in this, right? Like sort of like walk the walk. Talk the walk.
Yeah,
the
why
walk,
not? Whatever. Both.
I mean, that was horrible. I think one of the biggest things is like I would want to make sure that my base team or my first couple of hires are kind of like equity partners on my company. Mm. Because I think that that would be so huge and so significant for these people to actually want to make this happen and grow and like believe in it. I would definitely make sure to hire account people that truly will make the clients understand that like people's life matter, like personal life matters. So like, not working late should, I think working late should really not be a thing unless a specific thing, like once every whatever months, yeah. Right? Like, I think you have to make the creatives be in things they believe in, right? Like I was always put into things that weren't purpose driven, and that's kind of where my passion lays. And I just got tired really fast. So I think like you have to make sure to listen to your creatives and like, or your people and overall, and make them being something they are passionate about.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just honestly the idea of like a freelance agency to me just sounds like the most exciting right now.
What,
like,
do you mean?
Like just kind of having like an almost like becoming like a freelance hub almost, right? Like you hire people to make the job and then they leave and like just keep going.
It's like a project based,
right,
kind like of a community, project-based, if you like.
Community. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's, to me, sounds really exciting and sounds very much like today's world, because I do think like, how much longer do we think like the full-time thing is going to keep going for? Like people are kind of jumping to the freelance, unless it really drastically changes, right? Like if more money sounds like it would maybe make a difference, but the difference between freelance work and full-time, like the money is just insane.
Yeah.
Like it's like more than double. Like how would you want to go back to a full-time? It's just,
I'm not going to argue against that, mate.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a little bit about feeling, I guess, tokenized sometimes in the industry. So you're called EC Gay Creative, uh-huh. Right? You had to go to the bank and say, I am EC Gay Creative. And they're like, gay. No, so like the sexuality.
Absolutely horrible.
But how did you, okay, firstly, where did that come around? Why did you decide to call your company EC?
Well, I was just trying to be really clever. At first, I was just like trying to be like sort of funny and like be like, like what's like the one thing about me I could think of? Like, I'm gay, whatever. And I don't know, I think people just kind of find that funny somehow still. But then I kind of realized, okay, there's actually like a really, almost like a really big idea in this, right? It's like we as people overall in life, it doesn't even matter if you're in this industry or not, we're constantly being tokenized by any industry, absolutely. Like it's like you get hired if you're for being a woman, or you get hired for being trans, you get hired for being gay. So I thought it was actually like a really almost funny thing to make everyone that ever hired me now pay a gay creative. Like they're basically tokenizing me anyways. And I kind of realized this because I one of my agencies, I was told by a really good friend of mine that they would put my my face and like my, like me in like creative decks for presentations, even if I wasn't working on the project. And they wouldn't even ask me. Like, I didn't even find out until my friend told me this.
What?
They were like, you were like on this pitch. And I was like, I was not even in it. Like, what? So like, that's tokenizing, right? Like, they're kind of just using my race, my whatever the reason was, like, just to be like, we have a diverse team. But like, that wasn't an opportunity you gave me. You just kind of put me there for your own benefit. Mm-hmm. So I was like, if I'm gonna be tokenized anyway, why not use it in my advantage? Like, why am I not gonna? I'll tokenize myself. Why not? Fuck it. Like, if it gives me the job. Like,
and how have you found that tokenizing yourself has benefited you?
Actually, has been incredibly beneficial because, including the Emmy, which I use on every email I've ever write to reach out to people. I think just like the overall like gay creative intro on like the subject just happens to be very like, what? Like what is he talking about? So like at least you'll read the email and then you read I have an Emmy. And so then like it's like kind of hard to like at least like not get an answer, honestly. So strategically, I think it's actually a very safe and sound thing to use. And yeah, it has actually gotten me like endless jobs. It's been really good. A lot of embarrassment, like on like going to the bank or like opening a credit card or like using my credit card, my business credit card at a restaurant, like very, very awkward. but you know, I'll play the joke.
Yeah,
play into the joke. Yeah.
How do you think the industry views you now?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I think I grew up a little too fast.
In what way?
I mean, I think like my career is maybe what, like 6-7 years long this far, and like I'm an ACD now, and like I have my own thing. I feel like it grew really fast in the industry, and I think I have a reputation for getting the job done, which I think is a good view or like a good way to be looked at.
And why is that, right? Because I spent time with you. You're very efficient. Mm-hmm. You can work. It's a key word, right? It's hot.
It's hot.
it's a word. It's class as you're learning with English culture. So you're very efficient, but how, like, in 6 years to get to that level of efficiency is impressive. It means that you can probably do more than one role at once. So what is it? What do you think? What's the work to help you become more efficient?
I'm going to give this gold star to McCann. I think my first job was just so crazy. Like, I went from like being in school and like legitimately like drawing to like I worked for a really big client. Verizon was my first client. And oh my God, I worked 80 hour weeks, which was not great. But at the time it was a different time also. It was like pre-pandemic, and like, I was so thirsty and like so excited to like be like liked by people and like my CDs or like my higher ups, that I was just like, I don't care, this is freaking awesome. I'm making like 100 banners in one night, like this is great. But it really did sharpen my technical skills so much that I just became really, really fast at the technical stuff, so I can finish stuff super quick and have more time for concepting. And I also just like, I'm a really fast learner, and I think I really just became really almost like gamified the thing, and I just kind of like, I know how to get to good ideas. Mm-hmm. I know how to kind of drive myself to it. So I think like efficiency just kind of happened, honestly, with like practice in a way.
So it's understanding the technicality and also knowing the journey that you need to take to get to a good idea quite quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you still shit at, do you think?
I am really shit at wanting to do like smaller tasks.
Go on.
Yeah, I don't know. I think like I have this sort of like belief that like I want to do only my job and no one else's. So like if I'm being asked to do like full on like actually design, I just kind of get really annoyed, and like I just truly get annoyed. Like I'm kind of like no, like I'm truly like a nah person. So I think I maybe could get better at like accepting that sometimes that has to happen. But I also kind of just have like this like dichotomy of like, well, maybe it doesn't need to happen anymore.
You don't care.
I worked for it. But but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I could get better sometimes at like getting a little more accepting of like, this needs to get done, just do it.
Yeah. Is there anything that you don't believe in that a lot of the world does?
In the industry?
Mm.
Yeah, awards.
Awards,
yeah,
but you got an Emmy down there.
But I didn't seek it, like it just happened, I guess.
So why do you think the industry goes wrong when they believe in awards?
I actually think this is my perspective on awards. I think, why did I say it like that?
I like it. It's more like the entry bit. Nice, media trained.
To be honest, I think it's a distraction, in a way. I think it's like this massive distraction from like actually making work that actually changes culture, because I think creatives that are trying to get awards are almost like actually doing a math equation, because I mean, I've been trained for this as well. Like I know how to do it. I just don't think that those are the best ideas. Mm. Like, we're constantly celebrating ideas that win awards when, like, in truth, like, the only thing behind awards is just, like, having the money to submit for it. Like, companies spend millions of dollars to submit for awards. So, like when I did my first project, I had no money. And, like, the idea of me submitting that to awards meant, like, legitimately, like, 3 months of rent. So, like, I think awards are just actually trying to, they're meant to take out the smaller people out of the way, because they can get to a big agency level of awards because they can't afford it. So it really just kind of makes those people growth be smaller and like slower. I think it's just like, if you're focused on making awards, you're not actually focused on making work that is changing culture actually, because all the ones that win awards are just celebrated by people in the industry, not real people.
So would you go to Cannes?
Well, to get wasted. Yes. I mean, yes, I would go to get wasted and, like, maybe find a hot French guy. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not against the idea of getting awards. I think that just...
Seeking them.
I mentor a lot of younger creatives, and, like, their first thing they always say is, like, how do I get an award? And I'm like, I'm not a traditional creative in a way, right? Like, my career didn't get better because I got awards. My career just kind of got recognition from, like, people, like, normal people. And I think, like, everyone is just trying to go for these awards. Like, you're kind of forgetting that there's also, like, people outside of the industry that can get your recognition, right? Mm. Like, it's like, I mean, TikTok influencers, that's what they're doing, right? They're getting, like, likability from regular people. They don't need awards. They don't care about awards. And they're making probably more money than most agencies. So, like, I think it's just a little bit of a distraction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you had a room full of new, budding, 21-year-old Argentinian creatives, mm-hmm. we're going to say, right now, which one piece of advice would you give them?
Whew. Honestly, like, I think it's going to be a little corny, but believe in yourself. I think it's the most important thing you can do when you're young. Like, I got derailed a lot of times for not believing in myself. And I think it's really easy to not believe in yourself, right? When, like, you have all these, like, older creatives who have been in the industry for so long sort of telling you, like, you need to do more and, like, you need to do better, which, like, it just means they want you to work more, like, later, later hours. And I think, like, looking back at those moments where I felt really insecure and really, like, I didn't believe in myself, I was doing just fine. Like, I could have just kept doing what I was doing and I would have probably gotten the same results. Like, yeah. I think believing in yourself kind of happens to be, like, the key to everything, right? Like, you push yourself more when you still believe in yourself, or you, like, truly think that what you're doing is okay. Like, you just don't put so much pressure that it, like, brings you down.
Would you change anything about how you enter the industry?
Yes.
What would you change?
I would say no to working late. Honestly, I feel growing up is one of those weird things where, like, I'm really thankful that I actually managed to create this, like, group of incredible people in my life. But there's so many people, like, I actually lost because of work that, like, it even, like, makes me a little bit emotional. It's like, it's just so sad to think that, like, I had people in my life that made me so happy and I lost them over working for, like, Verizon. Like, what? Like, a telecom company. Yeah. I truly lost friends and lovers, and, like, I hurt and let down people in my life that I love over a telecom company. It's just so disturbing.
Yeah.
Like, I wasted my 20s in a way. Like I had a good 20s, but I still feel like I would have lived so much more. Like, right now, I feel like I'm living the most I've ever lived, and I'm so happy, and I've never been this happy, but, like, I could have done that in my 20s. Like,
it's funny, why the not? Argument you normally get against that is, yeah, but would you have got all the other jobs had you not have worked that late? But do you believe that you
I
would?
I think I would have, because I think, like, the idea of working late just goes back to just, like, people are just trying to maximize everything they can to make more money, but, like, the job will get done anyways. Mm. And I think it's proof, like, today is proof that all of that was a lie, because today we don't do that anymore. Yeah. Like, we're kind of in the anti that. We're literally talking about a work week. So, like, we're clearly realizing slowly that you don't really need to, like, give up your life to make the work be done. Like, it can just get done. We literally have, like, things that get do things for us. Like, why do we need to be there sitting on a computer to, like, yeah. get it done? Like,
there's a presenteeism, right? That there's, mm-hmm. like, we feel more comfortable paying your salary if I can see that you're working.
Yeah, but I think it's just sad because, like, the people that are comfortable with that are the people who, like, just kind of accepted that they lost people in their life, and it's just kind of like, this is what life should be. But yeah. I don't know. Like, I always look at the older people who kind of experience this, right? Like, for me, like, I experienced that. So now I will make sure that I'll never put someone through that. Like, I think it's freaking horrible for you to be like, if you want to get somewhere, you should lose your friends and family. Like, yeah. that's honestly disgusting. Like,
fair enough. I want to speak about the future. So,
love the future.
You're welcome to it. There's a spaceship. Yeah. So, you're happy right now. I can tell. I feel you're happy. We've had many an evening, morning, lunch, everything. And I feel like you're free financially. Mm-hmm. You're free with your time. What do you want in the next 2 years' time? And by the way, I don't expect there to be a succinct answer in this question, because you can just say for this totally, to carry totally. On, right?
Yeah.
Because actually, like, for a lot of creatives that might be listening to this, they might look at your life and go, how can he want any more from this, right? Mm. But I want to ask you that question because we are in New York and it is a place yeah. where you ask you for more, right? So what is more? What is more, Ezekiel? What is more kind of going to make you more joyful, do you think, in the next 2 years?
I think I want to expand my creative world in a way. Like, right now I'm, like, really sort of obsessed with the idea of, like, writing a TV show. Like, starting my own thing sounds great as well. And it definitely is, like, in the back burner right now a little bit, but, like, it's there. Writing a book. Like, I think I want to maybe even act. Like, I don't know. I just really, like, I'm really interested in, like, trying different things right now
yeah.
because I have more time to do that. And, like, I think that's kind of my next journey. It's just kind of, like, I don't want to get out of the industry because I still believe in it and, like, I really love it. But I still would like to try something else. Like, the writing a TV show right now sounds like actually the most exciting thing in the world.
So expanding your creative skill set with something that you're passionate about and also mm-hmm. building your network of different creative people
yeah.
and meeting yeah. them. I like that. And there's nothing interesting about that, I think, that's numeric, right? So you've right. not said, I want to, this is the figure that I want to go for. Or
no,
this
see,
is the
like,
title.
That doesn't drive me, really. Like, it's great, and I really love being financially free, but, like, it never has been about, like, getting more money, per se. It's been more about, like, getting more freedom, which I obviously, money allows for that, right?
Yeah.
But, like, but the goal was more freedom, like, more me time. And I think yeah. I've achieved that. So, like, that's good enough.
Okay. If you could ask one thing. Actually, no. I'm going to change my question right now. It's going to be much. it is industry-led, and it's around the kind of, I guess, what frustrates you the most. But if you were to ask one thing from the industry to change, what would that be, do you think?
I think I would probably ask the industry to honestly just stop treating people like they are a number, or like stop treating people like they're not, like they're replaceable. Because I think you should not be hiring people that you think are replaceable. You should be hiring people that are irreplaceable, and you should definitely be making them feel like they are irreplaceable, because people want that. We all seek that, right? We all seek, even like in personal life, we all seek, like, in a way, approval, but like I think we all seek to be irreplaceable and anything that we do. And I think it's a good promise. It really drives people to want to do more and better and, like, feel good about themselves. I think maybe we actually talked about this a lot of times, where, like, I think people get really tired of feeling like they're not appreciated or, like, loved or treated like what they're doing is actually something special. And I think that just kind of needs to happen a lot more in this industry. I mean, we're talking about people who, like, feel like they're talented, right? Or like they should feel like they're talented to make creative work. So why don't we make them feel that way? Like,
how do you make someone feel like they're talented? Like, go further with that.
Listen to them, and like listen to what they want, what they need, what they are trying to get out of a job. Like, I think we talked about this, and like that's kind of how we met. Like, I think the recruiting process in the States has always been so, so cold. And like, it feels ironic to me because it does happen to be kind of like one of the most influential people in a creative's career, right? Like, it's like the person that connects you with your next role. And like, if I have many recruiters sort of made me feel like, I literally had a recruiter laugh on the phone to me when I was saying like, I want a senior role. She literally laughed at me and she was like, no, like you can't get that. And I was pissed. I was like, actually already got it. But like, but I don't think everyone would react that way. I think like if somebody was a different personality than I have, I think their career would have stalled, or like they would have truly felt so bad about it. Like they have an impact. And I think like they need to be, I think recruiters need to be a little bit more human. Mm-hmm. They really just need to treat their creatives like they're like this special prize, and not like in an over the top way, more just like a, know my work, like read my site. Like I actually do that. I put on my site like, oh, there's little moments where like I will immediately know, and I plan this, I will immediately know if a recruiter has been on my site and looked at my work, because if they don't mention some of these things, then they definitely didn't even read my about me page. So like it makes a difference. Like I don't want to work with a recruiter that doesn't actually know what I want and what I'm looking for in my role, and what drives me, what makes me excited, because I know that then the role is going to be probably shit. Like, I'm going to be working for, like, Verizon again. Like, you know what I mean?
Until
like,
3 in the morning.
It's like, yeah. So,
how would you give advice to a creative to spot a bad recruiter?
Do what I do. I think, like, you need to find whatever your niche is, right? Like, in the way that you talk about your work or whatever your brand is. And, like, put little snippets of that are a little bit dramatic in a way to make sure that, like, for example, like, I have this joke on my site about, like, how everyone thinks always that I'm Brazilian, and like they always like confuse me from Brazil because Americans don't read, and like they basically think that Brazil and Argentina is the same place. So like actually like when people like it's like a whole paragraph all about like I'm not Brazilian, not Sudanese, like I like go on and on. So like people always like make a comment about that, or like just like I do this thing about being biblically gay because my website is thebookofezekiel.com. Check it out.
Oh, what a plug. Oh, there you go.
No, but it's like, I think those moments are just kind of funny and enough where like if you read my About Me page, you'd be like, you say something. And there's like many moments like that. But I think you just need to find what are your key moments on like your side or your resume. Even on my resume, I have this thing that I'm like, if I don't get this job, I'll be a stripper. Like, so like, people will say something, being like, that was funny, or some, you know, like, just something.
So, biblically gay, I mean, that is the bit that stayed with me, right? When you reached out, when we kind of got connected, I went on the site, and I was like, I couldn't stop repeating that. I was even, like, telling people that I was going to meet a biblically gay person. So, and so that, it stays with me. But I think what you're saying, really, is, like, if you're going to be a creative person that markets brands, market yourself.
You should market yourself.
Right?
I mean, you should be the first thing you crack, right? Like, you should be the first marketing job you've had. Like,
yeah.
You're a brand. In today's world, like, everyone is a brand, right? And, like, more than anything, like, you should be a brand. And, like, because, like, it's memorable. It makes it memorable. Like, again, like, I sign every email as a gay creative. So it's like, I'm sure they don't get, like, any other emails that get signed that way, right? So it's like, I think like moments like that just really make you become a brand and not just like another chess piece.
Have you ever had any negative feedback on the gay creative?
Yeah. I had this one older white dude sort of be like, you think you can get jobs by saying you're gay? Like, some people do not want to hire a gay person. And I was like, applause. Like, you literally, exactly, I don't want you to hire me. You're not the target audience. Like, I'm not an idiot. Like, yeah. I don't want to work for you. Like, I don't want to work for someone who doesn't want to hire a gay person anyways.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not going to sell anti-gay propaganda. So, like, good for you, I guess.
Isn't it funny that people are scared of that, right? I think there is a fear, and this is the bad side of marketing yourself quite strongly, like you have, is that you will not be for everyone.
Right.
And that's the good thing. But I think people fear the rejection or the sense that someone might say something a little 100%. Bit unkind about
but
them.
But I honestly get, I fire up by unkind people. I love hate. No, just kidding. But like, but I love being hated on. It really drives me to want to prove something. So yeah. Like, again, every single time I got broken up with and like was brokenhearted, like the thing I did was like focus on my career and immediately get a better job, more money, like a better place. Like, I get driven by hate, honestly. Like,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, like I'm good with that. Like, hate on me, I don't care. If I also, like, again, it was that saying, like, if you're not doing something controversial, then you're probably not doing anything. Like, so not saying that like what I'm doing is crazy controversial, but I think it's important to just like, if you know your brand. Also, I think it kind of scares people a little bit, or it makes them a little bit uncomfortable. Like, if you have a creative who really knows themselves, and like, you're probably not gonna be able to like abuse them in a way, right? Mm. Like in the work environment, because clearly, like, I have a very high sense of self, and like, I know what I want and what I like. Like, all my contracts, I will actually say, like, I don't work past six, and like, if I do, it's like overtime. Like, there's all these like little things that I will put in contracts to make sure that it's like my choice. Like, yeah. Because of having a very high sense of self, like, I just don't really like to be fool around. So
yeah. I really like that high sense of self. I'm going to steal that. It reminds me of you, the 8 Mile. I think everyone always mentions it, right. Yeah. 8 Mile, he's up on the stage, go and tell them something they don't know about me. And it's important. I think the thing that I'm taking from this is like, write down the values that are important to you. Mm. I always say this, like, when we're picking unknowns values, we got everyone in the business to send three words that are the most important traits in a human being. So like, honesty, curiosity, motivation. Those are, I think, the three. There are more like accountability and other things, but like, once you do that, it starts to like build this long list of names or words, sorry. But then from there, we said, like, we'll write down little examples per word, right? So accountability, I think we sprint at the beginning, not at the end, right?
Yeah.
We sprint at the beginning, not at the end. What does that mean? It means that like, we want to be accountable to get shit done early,
yeah,
rather than being this like dragging on sort of thing.
Important, yeah.
Right, really 100%. Important. So I quite like the idea if you're trying to have a higher sense of self and therefore hours that people respect, start to write out what's important to you.
Yeah.
And die on that hill.
Also, how are you going to be a good creative if you don't have a high sense of self? Like, you know, creative work comes from like yourself, right? So like, if you don't have a very, you know, sort of like succinct POV on who you are and what kind of work you deliver, like, your work is just probably going to be another ad instead of just being this like very special thing, maybe. That kind of like, I get told a lot that a lot of my work kind of has like this cohesive storyline in a way. Like, even if I did work for Verizon, like the piece I did for Verizon was this like very honest human, like, honestly, I tear up still watching it. It's like, that's very me. Emotional work is very me. And I think, like, if you know yourself and who you are as a creative, like, a high sense of self, I think really gives you that liberty of creating work that is very you and personal.
Right? Tell me about bad advertising and why is bad advertising still happening in the world?
Somebody once told me that there's no such thing as bad advertising.
Okay.
Because bad advertising is just targeting a different audience.
Right.
So like, I think to me, again, I think the bad advertising to me is the one that is just targeting the industry. I think that to me is the concept of bad advertising. Like, the work that is honestly just like, that maybe an ECD, a Droga will be celebrating and being like, that was genius. But then like, my friends will be like, I didn't even hear that, or like, I didn't even see that. What is that?
Yeah.
So like, we're all like, whoa, jerking each other off and like laughing around, but like, nobody actually cares. Like, I think that's bad advertising to me. Like, those are millions of dollars wasted on something that could have actually maybe impacted culture.
And it didn't.
Yeah.
Speaking of culture, you're TikTok famous, I'm from what TikTok I understand. Wow, I don't know. Somebody stopped us in the street when we were walking together.
Funny.
And they said, are you the guy from the reels, right?
Oh, whoa. That's funny.
What happened? Why did you suddenly become an internet sensation?
Well, it's getting there, but not yet. But I got stopped by this guy on the street about like touring my apartment, basically. And he has like 4.7 million followers. So like, kind of an obvious answer in a way, but yeah, they toured my apartment and it just became this like, I did this thing where I planned my outfit, actually, because like people are laughing about it, but I'm like, I'm laughing at you. I planned this, like, I know what I did, right? Like, I wore this ridiculous little sweater, which like highly advise you should go check it out because it's funny. But people could not stop talking about it. And that's kind of what viralized the video in a way. And like, I have a nice place too, but like, it was kind of like, everyone was just like, what the fuck is he wearing? And I was like, it worked. It really worked. So like, it is kind of the thing that is like going around town, but I'm like, I know that like New Yorkers get my outfit anyways and they like it.
Yeah.
It's just like middle America or like.
That are mainly commenting.
Yeah, they're freaking out about it. But that's like, again, that would be bad advertising, right? And it's like, that worked for me though. Like,
and you've got jobs off the back of this stuff.
I did.
Right?
I got my biggest job to date actually, which is really odd. I actually thought, at first I thought he was fully joking because like I'm on this call and he's fully like, I saw your TikTok video of your apartment and I just like was thinking like the way that he pulls together all these like eclectic pieces into one storyline, like that's what we need in a creative director for us. And I was like, have you seen my site? Like, do you know what my work is like? Cause you know, maybe it's just not the fit. And yeah, like that was the selling point. And he fully like basically like gave me his whole marketing budget, which is insane.
This is incredible. Again, this is like backing up the whole theory of marketing yourself, right? He can go on a site and he's very, very clear. I'm going to ask you a weird question that I've never asked anybody on this podcast ever.
Don't get too comfortable though.
Yeah, I'm going to get. Yeah. What is it that you love about our company, Unknown?
I think I told you this many times at this point, but I will gladly say it again. Well, obviously now we're like friends and like it's evolved, but I think the most interesting thing that I like immediately noticed about you guys when we met was this, like, you guys are truly just human. Like, you're just people. And it shows. And it really is like what I was saying before, right? It's like the idea of having this like almost like friendship, like relationship with a recruiter that like truly knows you, you truly know them, you're kind of like together, almost like holding hands towards like whatever success means to either side. It's just how it should be. Like, and I think like the connection just was immediate, but not only because of us as friends. I think it's just like, it was evident that you were listening to me and like paying attention. And I think like that just doesn't happen in New York. To be honest, I cannot even name one recruiter who has been like that. And like, obviously you guys just are getting yourself situated here, so we haven't really gotten a job together yet, but like I could tell that like you guys will be influencing so many young creatives' lives. Like it's obvious almost. And like, if I had you guys when I was a young creative, like I think even my career probably would be even better. Like, honestly, I think I would have definitely felt so empowered because like you guys like so believe in me and like you've been so nice about honestly my career, and it's been like really nice to see it from someone else's eyes. And I think that's what you obviously will do for other people that just other recruiters don't. So wow.
Thank you, Ezekiel.
I love you.
I love you too, man. I love you too. Okay, I've got one last thing. We have like a few amount of minutes left, and I promised that we would say to you to bring along, or ask you, sorry, to bring along your elephant vomit, okay? Which is a strange term, but I can say it with you. I was banned from using it on the last podcast, but we're bringing it back.
Elephant's vomit too.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what
like,
I mean?
Hashtag.
Is that what you're bringing along? I want the world to know that elephants vomit. So what? Okay, this is what you frustrate. I've asked you a lot about what frustrates you about the industry, but hopefully you might have stored something else in your head. There's a long scroll.
It's a CVS receipt, honestly, which is an American joke. But
okay, so what is your elephant vomit of the industry?
I mean, we sort of talked about a lot of them, but being tokenized, I think, is horrible unless you learn to like take advantage of it. Being underpaid, fucking crazy that people get paid so little for a job that is making them so much money. Like, that to me is just ridiculous. And I think like there's a big lying about freelancing, because I don't think people want them to figure out how sweet it is and like how much greener the grass actually is on the other side. So like that is huge. I think like if you're doubting freelance, like go check it out. You'll be happy you did. This sense of like always making creatives feel like they can do better than the agency they're in. That is one of the most horrible things I've ever was made feel. And it happens a lot to a lot of my friends. I guess like also like, I'm going to go back to money. When you get promoted in the same place, right? You get only like a 10K like bump. And like if you go to somewhere else, you get like a 30K bump. Mm. So I'm like, retention sounds important. Like maybe you figure that out. Like why are you giving them less than they could get somewhere else? Like, letting people in the room also. Like why is it always like the ECDs that are in the rooms? Like why are not younger people in the room? Like why are not younger? Like this is literally the future of this industry lays on people my age or younger, to be honest. Like we understand culture, we understand technology in today's world better than any ECD will. Right now, to be honest, like they're just like age out, which like they have obviously a lot to bring to the table too, but like let's make that table a little bit bigger and like let's all work towards making the work, not just like the higher up people. I hated not being led into rooms like when I was a younger creative. Like I'm doing the work.
I've never had this many elephant vomits, I have to be honest. My face is covered in elephant vomit. I want to say thank you so much.
It's real. Elephant vomit is real.
Ezekiel Gonsoli, thank you so much. This has been incredible. I've loved every moment of this. I think this is like minute for minute the most amount of truth bombs we've received.
Love truth.
So thank you so much. You. Love you more than I love your Emmy.
Love you more than Miami too. Take that back.
Thank you, mate.